KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Big Pharma, Market Failure, on Friday, June 9th at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Corporate CEO Richard Master will speak with his new documentary, which focuses on the dynamics behind the escalating cost of pharmaceuticals in the U.S. and the impact of soaring healthcare costs on U.S. businesses, working families, and our overall economy. The screening will be followed by comments and Q&A session with Dr. Richard Masters. Again, that's Big Pharma Market Failure on Friday, June 9th at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hi, this is John Shuck. On The Beloved Community, I speak with Caverly Morgan. She's the founding director of Peace in Schools. In 2014, Peace in Schools launched the first four-credit high school mindfulness course in the nation, right here in Portland. I also speak with Dinah Ramey Berry. Dr. Berry is an associate professor of history and African diaspora studies at the University of Texas at Austin. She's the author of The Price for Their Pound of Flesh, The Value of the Enslaved, From Womb to Grave in the Building of a Nation. Catch The Beloved Community Friday morning at 9 on KBOO.
Good morning, good morning. I am Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. Today, I just want to check in with my community and find out how are we. This has been a horribly, horrible, hard winter so far, hard year so far. We're moving into spring. There has just been massive protest. There's been massive hate crimes. What are we doing to take care of ourselves? Because this is only the beginning of what the resistance looks like. And so I want to have a conversation today about kind of where we are as a resistance community and what we're doing to take care of ourselves, understanding that this is not a sprint. This is a marathon. This is not, we're not going to solve all our problems with one protest, with one election. We're going to have to prepare ourselves to build slowly towards taking back our country and taking back the public airwaves. And so I want to hear from you. What are you doing to make sure that you are prepared for the long haul? What are you doing to make sure that you are taking care of yourself while we are in the midst of this chaos? I guess for me, maybe I'm just a little weird, but for me, I am a bit optimistic. And I am optimistic because out of chaos comes new energy, comes new opportunities, and comes new allyships and partnerships. So give me a call at 503-231-8187 and tell me what your piece in rebuilding our community, our democracy, our public airwaves, so that we're not focused on hate and hating people because they don't look like us, hating people because they don't share our same perspectives. What are you doing? And I think that's really the question, because I think each of us individually have to take on a component. I also think that collectively we have much more power when we work together. And so I want to, so as an example, I know that this weekend is Rose Festival. It's raining, so it must be so, which means that Right to Survive will be hosting their annual event. But I understand, I got a message last night that somebody has fenced off the area where Right to Survive sets up their tents. I understand that the city of Portland fenced it off, and the owner of the property said that he didn't have anything to do with it. So I'm hoping that I get a call from Ibram Mubarak this morning to give me an update on what is happening with that process. The wonderful thing about Right to Survive, if you're not familiar with them, is they are an advocacy organization that works with the houseless population to ensure that they have that their civil rights and their human rights are protected. This will be the fourth year that the annual Pitch a Tent has taken place. And it normally is set up around 2nd and Washington. And so I think stay tuned, because I don't know if they're going to be able to use that space this year, or maybe they'll have to take over another spot downtown. And so the reason that Pitch a Tent happens is to really highlight the hypocrisy of the city of Portland. 364 days a year, people who are forced to sleep on the street are harassed by police and other community members because they don't think they should be on the street. And quite frankly, they wouldn't be if they had someplace else to be. And because we have failed miserably in our housing policy, we have more people on the streets today than we did when we started the 10-year plan to end houselessness. Unfortunately, we also have the same people in charge of fixing that problem. And so Pitch a Tent starts tomorrow at 10 a.m. and runs through noon on Saturday. And the goal is really to highlight the fact that some people sleep on the street because they have to, not because they want to, not because they're trying to get a good spot for a parade. They sleep on the street because they have absolutely no other choice. And so I am hopeful that the city did not put that fence up in an attempt to prevent Pitch a Tent from being able to do their advocacy this year. I think this year is more important than any other year for Pitch a Tent to take place. I just wanted to make sure that that they are able to do that. So, Ibram, if you're listening, please give me a call and let me know. Again, the number to call is 503-231-8187. Did you participate in the protests over the weekend? I did not. I was very I couldn't, because I did have an NAACP event that took place on Sunday. But even if I had not had that event, I would not have gone. And I simply would not have gone because I don't want to put myself in a place where people are going to be yelling racial epithets at me, or they are going to be that I know they have the potential to be violent. And so I just chose not, I would not have participated even if I'd had the opportunity to. I wanted to make sure that protests have a purpose. They have consistently highlighted some of the biggest wrongs that take place, but it wasn't something that I felt was really going to move the ball. And as we've been able to see from the media spin has been very anti-left. The media spin has been very, it is the quote-unquote progressives that were the aggressors at this event. I'm very troubled by our police chief explanations for some of the events that happened on Sunday. I'm very troubled that having white supremacist individuals assisting Portland police and arresting protesters just is appalling. It's absolutely appalling. Having what we know are white nationalist groups working in conjunction with Homeland Security and Portland police to arrest protesters, to me, just takes this militarization of our policing to a whole new level. And it is my hope. I have seen that the ACLU has called for an investigation of what took place on Sunday. I hope that that happens. I am very, very concerned that we continue to see the military showing up as if they are headed to a war zone in a community that has had protests forever. And I think it's only going to get worse unless regular community members start making their voice heard. And having their voice heard means contacting the Portland City Council, the police chief, Mike Marshman. I mean, he needs to know that this does not reflect what the public wants. And I think, quite frankly, that City Hall needs to know that that's not what the public wants. Again, the number to call is 503-231-8187. Did you participate on Sunday? What was your experience? Did any good come out of Sunday at all? That's the question that I have. What were the positives that came out of either protest on Sunday? I would really like to have a conversation about that. And I still want to have a conversation about how do we prepare for the long haul. Clearly, we are going to be we're going to be at this for a little while. This is not going to be one of those quick fixes. But there's a lot that we can do, and there's certainly a lot that we can do locally. And if we, again, band together, but I think we have to be very clear. We the left, let me just say we the left. I think we the left have to be very clear that when we protest, we have to set the standard for how protests take place. I've organized a lot of protests in this community. And everyone that I've ever organized has been organized under the premise of nonviolent direct action as articulated by Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King. I'm not saying that anybody else's protest is wrong. I am saying, however, that it has been my experience, my personal experience, that when you set the standard that the protest that you are organizing is nonviolent direct action, that it's family friendly, that you encourage people to seniors to participate, children to participate, it totally changes the vibe. And I have never, ever organized a protest that ended up with police violence. I've witnessed protests with police violence, but never one that I've organized. And so I certainly want to talk about that as well. We're going to go to the phone line. Good morning, Edie. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning. I was there most of the time at 4th and Madison as a peacekeeper. And concerned that there might be more time spent with the police or infiltrators from the fascists trying to cause trouble to blame on us to justify police brutality. So I was particularly watching the police who were acting very different from how Ted Wheeler promised me Thursday morning he would have it. I said, if you're going to have police there, I want to have equal numbers and equally geared up and equally aggressive or supportive looking, facing both sides, the fascists and the anti-fascists, and having equal enforcement. And he said, oh, yeah, I agree with that totally, and the chief of police totally agrees with that because it would be really bad optics.
Right.
And I says, I don't care about optics.
Right.
I care about lives, safety, and democracy.
Right.
And I emphasized again examples in which the Portland police, I've observed the last 30 years, have provoked, and provoked, falsely accused people of doing things. Sometimes police infiltrators did it. But no matter what, who did it or what it was ever done, it was never an excuse for the police behavior. And
so what did you observe from the police specifically at the march?
Well, one of the things is that they claimed that there were rocks and bricks and things. And I was observing that there wasn't what they claimed thrown at them was not thrown at the time. I was keenly attentive watching on hypervigilance.
Right.
And there was a man who was on CNN radio very hysterically, like, oh, this is live, you know, there's vandalism there, and the police have to engage, and the police have to, because there's vandalism. I witnessed this horrible vandalism of the women's restroom. So when our permitted rally was done at 4 o'clock, and we tried to encourage people to get out of the way and leave, I then went down to the women's restroom, and that's between 4th and 3rd. And I looked for any kind of vandalism, which I don't excuse for the police behavior anyway. And I found one phrase written one place, one time, with black marker, who knows who did that, and I saw four stickers. There were like white stickers and a black swastika with a red line through it, and you know, another one was anti-fascist. And I was looking around for any kind of vandalism. I mean, you go into a women's middle school restroom, and you're going to find a whole lot more than that, and Powell's hundreds more than that.
Right, right. And so basically what you saw were stickers that people had stuck up on the walls, but you didn't see any destruction in the restroom.
Four stickers and one felt mark writing, and I saw no bricks pulled out, no bricks down, no bricks.
Uh-oh, looks like we lost our caller. I'm sure she will call back. There's nothing like eyewitness testimony from an event, especially from a peacekeeper, because peacekeepers are trained to observe and to de-escalate situations that have the potential to lead to violence. And so it is really key. I know whenever I organize a march, I get the Portland Peace Team to participate. And so give a lot of credibility to people who serve as peacekeepers, because I know that they don't have a dog in the fight. They're just simply there to make sure that people are safe. Do we have her back? Excellent. Sorry, we lost you there.
So I saw that there was no bricks missing. There were no bricks damaged. There was no bricks on the ground. There was no red clay marks on the brick. Is thrown onto the pavement, it kind of chips or leaves any crumbs or leaves kind of a red mark. There was none of that at all. Now, I had watched, there had been a white man on the roof, but he was not throwing things at people, and there was not a brick roof.
Hmm.
It's a tile roof. So there was no bricks on the roof to be taken off or taken down. And when I saw the bags of the so-called photographs of what we found on the scene, well, they often will say, you know, we found this at the scene. Well, that's because the police put it there. You know, the fake guns, the fake knife or whatever else.
Right.
And those bricks did not show in the pictures. You enlarge it. There's no picture. There's no damage of them being chipped or cut out or being knocked or being like when the corner, you know, the edge hits the pavement or something.
Right.
There is no picture. It's not visible. So, again, that was false, planted evidence, false accusations, and even if it were true, it's not valid for the police behavior.
Now, they also said, posted on
the corner.
I want to try to get the whole story. So, what did the police do? How did they respond? They said they were attacked, and then? Your march was over at 4. What time are we talking?
I saw no evidence of police being attacked. I saw more rows of police aggressively geared up in riot gear facing Chapman Square.
Right.
It was not equal amount, not equally geared up, not equally aggressive, you know, like sometimes 3 police facing Terry Schrunk.
Mm-hmm.
On the corner of 4th and Madison in Terry Schrunk Plaza was a pole that had up a flyer that said, or posted, you know, federal park property rules, and it says as federal property weapons are prohibited. And I saw from 4th and Madison, and from 4th between Madison and the other street south of that, many people obviously with rifles, with automatic shotguns, with obvious weapons, who were in Terry Schrunk Plaza, who were not wearing police gear, and they were not being pulled out or arrested or having their weapons taken from them. I saw shields. Then later, I went home to kind of look at things, and I saw online, YouTube, that other folks had done live streaming of wood shields with the Nazi signals or different things that were by the fascists in Terry Schwank Plaza.
But that wasn't called vandalism.
And that was not called shields. They were told they were not allowed to have weapons or shields.
Right.
So it was someone live, a woman's voice of a live streamer saying, hey, you know, you told them not to have shields, but these are shields. Look, these are Nazi signals. Come on, please. You know, I can do it. And over trying to get the police to have equal enforcement and take those away. That's what I saw on YouTube after the fact. But when I was live watching, I saw police being more and more aggressive, pushing at people, getting closer and closer, and demanded that they get back from the sidewalk. They were on the sidewalk, get further back from the sidewalk, from the end of the sidewalk to the middle, from the curb to the middle of the sidewalk, then off the sidewalk, and then back further. Push, push, push. But nothing like that. They were also claiming they were trying to keep the groups separated from each other.
Right.
But they allowed the fascists and bullies to come into our group. We tried to have them escorted and de-escalated, but they were allowed to invade us, and we could handle that. So there was an unequal enforcement.
I'm troubled by that. I'm really troubled by the unequal enforcement, and it appears that from pictures and video that I've seen, that the militias were working with the Homeland Security, FBI, and Portland Police.
Knocking people over, pushing against people.
Yes. And that is absolutely unacceptable. I mean, I hope that there is more specific video that then can be taken. Actually, I don't even know who you take it to now. I was going to say
ACLU.
Maybe the ACLU, because I was going to say IPR would be useless. The Department of Justice would be useless because they were all part of this police action that took place.
They also said they took away, they called their weapons when they were just sign sticks, but there were bigger signs, sticks, boards, you know, bigger, harder, more dangerous looking ones in Terry Schwank Plaza. They were not removed. They were not taken.
And
we
so
had signs in ours, and ours were not taken.
So Oregon is a state where you could carry a weapon in public as if it is not concealed. However, if you are on federal property that has a sign posted that said no weapons allowed, and the other side, the pro-Trump protesters, were allowed to assemble with weapons, that's a problem. That is a huge, that's a huge problem. Because, of course, if you're treating one side different than you're treating the other side, the implication is somehow the police and Homeland Security are in cahoots with the white nationalists, or at least supporters of the white nationalists and their actions and activities. And so that's...
The white supremacists were yelling provocative, derogatory things at us. At City Hall, and the police didn't go between them, face them, tell them to back off, you know, cut it out. And yet they were heavily, I mean, at one time there was five lines, most often three lines, you know, side by side of cops very aggressively facing and then pushing closer and closer and closer to Chapman.
Yeah, that sounds that sounds pretty frightening. And we know our police force is becoming much more and more aggressive, especially when they believe that they're either people of color or other folks who they want to keep contained.
The police also had vehicles with a loudspeaker system. This is the Portland Police. The Portland Police. You know, this is an active roadway, you know, keep the roads clear. Well, anyway, they allowed us to come out a few lanes out, marked off, and we were fine. But folks on the other side of 4th and Madison, on the north side, just went out you know, one person wide to take a photograph, or just, you know, too deep or something to play some music, unprecedented band. So they were, the police were really forcing, pushing them back on and threatening arrest. And they said over the loudspeaker, the Sporran Police, the Sporran Police, anyone off the sidewalk is subject to chemical weapons. And so I was trying to keep our folks, or whoever it was, Rubberneckers, you know, whoever it was,
right.
To not jaywalk, only cross the street when it says so, so they wouldn't have any excuse after us.
Right.
But totally unequal enforcement on the white supremacists.
Yeah, that deserves further investigation.
And there were violent drivers going down Fourth who were threatening to, you know, run over, hit people, and they were, you know, flipping them off or yelling at them or whatever else. And there was no enforcement. And there was all these cops there. They could have easily, you know, in their vehicles and everything, stopped them, and that did not happen. And then there was a more aggression towards bicyclists who were circling Terry Strong Plaza. And they were looking for any, you know, the police would get in the way. The police would, we would wait until we had the walk, or the police would, or the bicyclists would wait until it was clear, and then it was clear to go. Police would just, with their vehicles, rush through the intersection and endanger people's lives.
Well, I appreciate you calling and giving me your firsthand account. As part of the Portland Peace Team, do you debrief after these kind of events? And
we do. And I highly respect, admire, and trust them, and I recommend others. We had
As
the
do
Veterans
I.
for Peace. We had the Portland Peace Team. I really recommend that people get a hold of Dr. Tom Hastings at Portland State University Conflict Resolution. Get some training. They gave us 2.5-hour training prior that morning, and several 4-hour training Thursday night, and they have ongoing trainings. It's good for anyone. We use the Clara technique, calm and center, affirm, listen, affirm, respond. I mean, they're very wise. You be your own island or oasis of peace in the midst of the storm. So I highly recommend people.
As do I. It's a great program. Thank you so much.
And get involved with organizations and with events that they know are not going to turn sour.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate you calling in today. Really appreciate your firsthand information, and I agree the Portland Peace Team does some fabulous work. I appreciate your information, and I'll look forward to the follow-ups and investigation that happens in regard to Sunday's protests. Thank you again. I also would love to hear from the ACLU what they are planning to do. And I have to say, I have mixed feelings about the ACLU nowadays. I mean, the fact that they are protecting the rights of white supremacists to rally and spew hatred is a problem for me. I don't support that. I don't think that free speech and hate speech are the same thing. I think that it is really clear when people's free speech crosses the line from free speech to hate speech. And I do not support the ACLU's desire to defend white supremacists who want to rally and encourage hate and intimidation and violence against people who aren't in their group. And so I think I will need to invite David Rogers at some point to come on this program so he and I can have a conversation about what is the role of the ACLU and how do they find themselves in these situations sometimes where they're defending the most egregious speech in our community. But that's a conversation for another day. If you want to talk to me, give me a call at 503-231-8187. Let me tell you what's coming up today on The Boo. At 9 on Press Watch, Teresa Mitchell asks, what shall we do when racists are seen acting in concert with police? She'll have reactions from Sunday's pro-Trump / white supremacist rally. At 10, Chris Andre, host Eric Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. at 11 on Between the Covers, David Namor talks to Danny Shapiro about her intensely emotional novel, Hourglass, Time, Memory, Marriage, about the joys and challenges of matrimonial life. And at 11:30 on Words and Pictures, Authors and Comics chronicler R.C. Harvey stops by to talk about the National Cartoon Society's Reuben Awards event coming to Portland. Plus, animation director David Silverman recounts his career as one of the original Simpson animators. And we want to thank KBOO members for your generous support during our most recent spring pledge drive. If you missed it, you can still become a member by going to kboo.fm and clicking on donate. We're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Joe. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hi, Joanne. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Say, you mentioned that it seemed like some people from the alt-right were assisting the police.
Yes.
Isn't it more likely they were simply undercover?
What do you mean? You mean that they were police that were pretending to be alt-right?
That seems much more likely to me.
Well, I got to tell you, from the video that I've seen, they were clearly identified as folks that were with the alt-right group. I mean, they could have been undercover. I mean, I wouldn't put that past Portland Police or Homeland Security. But it appeared, based on the clothing that they were wearing, that they were really part of the militia groups, because they clearly had identifiable labels that connected them to the militia groups who were there, quote unquote, to provide security.
It just seemed like, I wasn't there live, but just looking at the video, it looked like this was a guy who was a cop and there was arrest going on. He kind of went into regular cop mode and...
I don't think so. I have seen these militias as they were like all camped out when the trial was going on for the Harney County folks. And they're the only people I know that can walk around with rifles and the police don't do anything or talk to them or ask them to put them away or anything. So I actually do think they were definitely militia. I know that police infiltrate these groups. They, you know, the history of the NAACP is police infiltration. So we know that the police infiltrate, the FBI infiltrate, and quite frankly, we believe that police provocateurs are the ones that kind of start most of the violence at any protest where that happens. But in this particular case, it looks pretty clear that the people assisting law enforcement were in fact part of the militia.
And you could tell by the way they were dressed.
Well, I mean, by the way they were dressed and the way they interacted in the crowd, right? I mean, as one thing, I mean, they definitely went back to their home base after they assisted cops. So I don't think they were cops. I think the cops were very well represented and were in the crowd as well, in plain clothes. But I certainly don't believe that those individuals were cops, because quite frankly, when cops are undercover, they would not be assisting the police in arrest. If their job is to infiltrate an organization, that would be the last thing they'd be doing.
Exactly. Okay, well, thanks, Joanne.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. 503-231-8187. You know, as the president of the NAACP, we have a long history of police provocateurs attempting to incite people to violent behavior and activity, attempting to take over memberships within the organization, attempting to get key positions so that they can change the direction that the organization goes in. So I know, I have no illusion, and I'm not paranoid. I just know that I have no illusion that the police aren't using every tool at their disposal. So, for example, the fact that the police chief was unaware that Portland police officers were taking pictures and photos of people's ID is absolutely the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard. Of course, the police chief knew that people were being photographed, quite frankly, ever since Charlie Hales was a mayor and police commissioner, I have seen myself personally, Homeland Security, taking pictures of people who show up just to testify at City Hall. So not even at a protest, but just to go to City Hall to have your voice heard. And so would I be surprised that police would be taking pictures? We know that Portland police intimidated downtown bar owners and to putting equipment in place so that when they checked IDs, the IDs would be scanned so that the police would have a database of people that went in downtown bars for entertainment. All this is facts that you can check out online. You don't have to take my word for it. And so we already know Portland police has been caught several times collecting data on nonviolent protesters, and I would not be surprised that they are continuing to do so. The fact that the chief is surprised should send a warning flag to all community members that the chief is a little bit disengaged from what's really happening on the street. We're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Cindy. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to address the guy that called in and said, oh, isn't that an undercover cop? Mm. No, the guy that was helping the police, his name is Todd Kelsey. He is a registered nurse from Texas who's currently living in Washington, and he is going around this summer all over the country causing trouble like this.
Ah.
Identified him and have been following his page. So
give me his name again.
Todd Kelsey. It's KELSAY.
Well, thank you very much. It's nothing like somebody calling with real information.
So he's definitely not an undercover cop, which keeps getting brought up.
Right. So, right. And we know it's not that cops weren't undercover. It's just Todd wasn't one of them, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right.
Those guys are white supremacists.
Right.
Self-identified white supremacists that belong to the Oath Keepers.
Right. And maybe, were you at the protest on Sunday?
Yes, I was in the medic tent. We treated lots of people who were injured by the police with rubber bullets and pepper spray. We treated journalists that were pepper sprayed in the face by the police. We treated a young man that we had to call his mother to take him to the hospital because he was shot in the head and had an injury.
Ooh.
We treated
a shot with a rubber bullet in the head?
Yep, yes. And we had another guy that was having heart trouble. We were overwhelmed by many people that were injured, and they were saying they were making announcements. They were saying that any movement would be considered criminal activity, and then they told people to move towards the center of the park, and when people started moving towards the center of the park, they started shooting, pepper spraying them and shooting them. They set it up to injure people who were cooperating with the police direction.
So what do you mean? What do you mean they set it up to injure people who were cooperating?
They kept making announcements that they were going to consider any movement criminal behavior, and then they told people to move.
Huh. So were there different police officers giving conflicting instructions, or was it
no,
the same?
No, they were yelling it on speakers. They kept saying, you know, anybody that moved towards the other group.
Looks like we may have lost you. hopefully you will call back. You know, we've been talking about Homeland Security, Portland Police, and, you know, maybe they're trying to interfere with this particular program today because the focus is on them. We don't normally lose two callers in one program, but hopefully she will be able to call back. So it is troubling when you hear these kind of stories from people, again, who weren't involved in the protests, but were there to serve a public purpose, like the earlier lady who called and talked about being part of the peace team, and then this last caller was part of the medic tent. I hope that there will be a detailed report presented to Portland City Council, especially to Mayor Wheeler, because I think that he has a very narrow perspective of what really took place. And unfortunately, I think the people he gets most of his information from are Portland police officers. So I think the information he gets is a bit slanted, because if those are the only people that you get information from, you can't help but get information that's less than accurate. You want to join the conversation? Give me a call at 503-231-8187. You know, the other thing that troubles me is that we've spent a lot of time talking about the horrific killings that took place on Max on Friday, a week ago Friday. But we haven't spent much time talking about the failure of our public safety system on Thursday evening when the 42-year-old black woman was assaulted by Jeremy Christensen on a Max train. And ironically, ended up at the exact same Max station in Hollywood, where she was then able to get the attention of a Portland police officer to report the attack. The Portland police officer went and talked to Jeremy Christensen. Jeremy Christensen said it didn't happen, and Portland police let Jeremy Christensen go. But then they came back and actually interrogated the woman who was assaulted on the train, who had a Gatorade bottle thrown at her. She was fortunate to have had pepper spray in her bag, so she was able to defend herself. But when Jeremy Christensen was questioned by Portland police, he said it didn't happen, and they let him go. And so my question for Portland police is, why was there a failure in our public safety system to arrest and prosecute Jeremy Christensen for the assault that took place on the Max train on Thursday? Because had Portland police officers done their job on Thursday, Friday would not have happened. And that's a question that I'm not hearing from the media or from anyone else. Who were those Portland police officers that decided that the black woman was the criminal and not Jeremy Christensen? And why aren't they being held accountable for their lack of action the day before? And I have asked the mayor to look into this. And once he gives me a response, I will let you know what he says. We're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Ibrahim. How are you today?
I'm doing great, and you?
I am doing well also. I started the program by saying that that your event that starts tomorrow morning at 10, Pitch a Tent, may be facing some challenges because of a fence that mysteriously appeared.
Sure. Right to Survive have been throwing the Pitch a Tent event where the city allowed the public to put tents up along the parade route overnight to watch the parade. Well, they do that for a theme of pleasure and entertainment.
Right.
And so Right to Survive has been doing putting tents up as a direct action against why can't houseless people put tents up as a way of survival.
Right.
So at my pitch a tent event, we have entertainment, we have different organizations come, we have people speak, we give away food, hygiene package, and put tents on the parade route so that the houseless people can enjoy the parade too.
Right, and isn't that like on 2nd and Washington is where you normally are?
It's on 4th and Southwest Washington.
4th and Southwest Washington.
Yeah, and so the organization, Right Survive, along with Sister LaRose Street Roots, Sisters in Strength, Cable, and Pear, and Outside the Frame, and so we put in a lot of effort, time, money, and then brainstorming along with people who said this event is good. So last year it took 10.5 blocks, and we had movies and everything and food, lots of food. And so we went by there to do the logistics of the place, and there was a fence around the building.
Right.
So I called the owner of that place, and he said, "Well, I don't care. I know y'all been doing good. Y'all keep it clean. I don't care. Y'all had an event, but I can't take the fence down because by the order of the mayor and the police, we had to put the fence up."
When did they order the fence to go up?
I guess it was yesterday, the same day I happened to walk past, and it was up.
So it just went up. So have you talked to the mayor?
I didn't talk. I went to the mayor. He was in session for the council meeting, and I sat outside up until about 4:30, and then I talked with Kristen Davis,
right.
I believe that's his name.
Right.
Yeah, and she said she would get on it right away, and then I got messages. I Facebooked it. I showed the fence around the building,
right.
And I got tons and tons of response. And then I got response from the mayor's office. Said he don't know nothing about the fence going up. And then people was adding a thing. Well, maybe because of the riots, or maybe because they didn't want the houseless people out there. Maybe because I don't know. But anyway, this event is a beneficial event to show that houseless and unhoused can
coexist, right?
Watching an event that the city is going on, the parade. So I don't know what kind of message this is sending. They pointing fingers at each other.
Right. And so the building owner says he has no problem with you camping there. However, he says that the city of Portland put it up. The mayor's office says they don't know anything about it, or they're working on it.
I didn't hear the last part.
Jenny. Oh, I'm sorry. So the owner of the building and the city of Portland are pointing fingers at each other, right?
Yes.
Right. But the mayor's office has not gotten back to you as of yet?
No, they haven't.
And so I think that one of the things that the mayor's office might want to know is that there has never, ever, ever been a police call, an arrest, anything negative happen at Pitch a Tent. Never, ever. So I think you should call the mayor first thing this morning and get his commitment. I mean, fences don't go up by themselves. Somebody had to authorize putting the fence up, right? The fence didn't just wake up.
Like they do grass and all
this. Right, right. The fence didn't just wake up and decide Southwest 4th and Washington was a great place to hang out, right? So I do think that because this starts at 10 a.m. tomorrow, I hope that you will contact the mayor today. And if you don't get a response, text me, and I will get on it as well.
Okay. And the sad thing is that we got people from Outside the Frame, from Pear, and from Cypher Crew, who they take young people who had a troubled past or runaway and have them to develop talents instead of selling drugs or getting in gangs.
Right.
They was going to perform and show their talent. They was going to sing. They was going to play their music. They was going to dance. They was going to act.
You have a huge lineup of folks who are planning to come to support the houseless community, right? Because I've seen I've seen all the, you've got a lineup of talent, local talent, young people, well-known speakers, and all of a sudden you show up the day before to do logistics and there's a fence in your stead. Yeah, I please, if you don't hear back from the mayor by noon, give me a call. Text me.
Okay. And you know my first response was, we can't say that on the air.
Right. Yeah. This is a PG-friendly air. I share your perspective, but we will. I believe the mayor is a man of goodwill, and he will correct this injustice.
If we can't get that spot, give us our own location, like Shrunk Park, where we can have our own thing and entertain our own self if they don't want us to be with the general public.
Well, I think it's totally disrespectful to the planning that has taken almost a year to the day before or 2 days before to fence it off and then not have the courtesy to have a conversation. I think that's totally disrespectful. But we don't know who's the one that's blowing smoke, whether it's the owner or whether it is, in fact, the city of Portland. And so I would say, do your due diligence and let's check in at noon. And whoever needs to have a conversation, we will make sure that that happens.
Thank you.
You are welcome.
Are you listening to cable, a fantastic radio station? Call in the mayor anyway. And tell him, hey, let those people perform.
And that is a non-paid commercial endorsement. Thank you so much, Ibram. And I got to say, I loved the event last year. I plan to be there this year, got my sleeping bags ready to go. And so I am really, really disappointed that an event that does so much for our city is being impacted by people behind the scenes. But we're going to fix that. We're going to make that happen. Thank you for your call, Ibram. We're down to about 8 minutes left in the program. If you want to get your 2 cents in, now would be a great time. Good morning, Beth. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
There was a caller into Paul's show on Wednesday who said that this Christian person that was the
Jeremy Christian,
alleged murderer, was at a protest in late April.
Yes.
And showed up with a baseball bat.
That's correct.
And
the police just took the bat.
Didn't arrest him.
Didn't arrest him. And actually, then they escorted him for his parade. And then TriMet gave them free bus service out of the neighborhood because my neighbors might have attacked them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, there's a problem. There's a huge problem. Again, a failure of our public safety system. Can you imagine a black or brown man walking around for bat at a protest and not being arrested? That would have been news.
Not get his ID photographed, not get...
fingerprinted, not get questioned, not get... not at least get taken downtown and booked. Even if they were released, they would have been booked. But no.
Right.
When you are,
apparently the cops were familiar with who he was.
They knew him, yes.
Random guy that said, "I'll, cut him some slack."
Right. No. They were very familiar with him.
So,
and this failure, I really want to know about this failure of our public safety system because I talked to the woman personally who felt like she was treated like she was the criminal as compared to the person who attacked her.
Well, and if it's on a train or, in a train station, there's got to be video. It's not like they couldn't get some other source information.
Very good point. And actually, the TriMet operator refused to call the police. She was banging on the door asking them, call the police, call Portland police. And he would not.
Wow.
So so what was the police first response to what happened on TriMet? We need to put more police on TriMet. I went heck No, we don't need more police. More police does not equate to safety, not in communities of color, not for poor folks, not for anybody that's not a rich business owner. Police are not what we need. I don't know if you remember this, but we used to have rider advocates on TriMet buses.
Oh, yeah.
You do remember? Okay, so you've been in Portland for longer than a minute, right? And these rider advocates were trained in conflict resolution. They wore yellow vests. They had radios, so they could communicate with police. And if they needed police, they could certainly call police. But their goal was not to engage with police. Their goal was to make sure the community had a safe, affordable way to be transported from point A to point B. And TriMet chose not to continue to fund community advocates in lieu of militarizing our public transportation system by hiring cops from all the jurisdictions that TriMet operates in.
Right. And at that time, there was a fair amount of friction between quote-unquote, the criminal element and regular riders. There
yes.
was a lot of harassment and some petty theft and some other, you know, problems.
Right.
And you didn't really necessarily need a cop to address
exactly.
that. You needed somebody to stand up and say, don't do that.
Right.
You know, that's what those gentlemen tried to do.
And women. There were women there, too.
The price.
Just saying. Yes, I agree. Right. And I actually shared that with Mayor Wheeler this week. I said, you know, we've been here before, right? But the solution before wasn't militarizing the public transit system. It was hiring community members and making sure that they were trained and prepared to be able to intervene where necessary. That's what we need. We don't need more police. We need a lot less police, because every time the police show up in mass numbers, somebody gets hurt.
Yeah, and it's not them.
And it's not them, right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your call. Have a great day. I think we may have another caller. Good morning, Edith. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
The phone number for Menash Management is 503.
Who is this and what? I think you may not. Oh, Edith?
Yes.
Are you on KBOO? Is that what you're calling? You started with a phone number, so you confused me.
Okay. There's a fence around the location of
right.
North and Washington for picket tent.
Right.
It's a property owned by Menash Properties.
Okay.
Their phone number is 503.
Okay.
221.
Okay.
4040. I'll say it again. 503-221-4040. I just called that. I talked with Susan, who answered the phone.
Right.
And I told her about the fence and said that we were planning on performing there. How soon is the fence coming down? She says, it's not. I says, how soon is the fence coming down?
Right.
We have to perform there.
Right.
And she says, it's not. It's never coming down. I says, why? And she says, she didn't say anything. And I says, under whose orders? She says, the owner. I said, why? She said she didn't know, but if I wanted, she would take my name and number and talk to the owner and have them get back to me. I asked what was the reason so that we could know how to meet their needs and,
right.
and have it, you know, win-win, and if not there, then where, and how to keep it safe for everyone to do that, and how soon who would contact Ibrahim Mubarak, and she said that she would go talk to the owner. I said, no, I will email him, and then I will have someone call you back.
Thank you so much. I'm so sorry. We are out of time. Thank you for that number. Thank you for that company name. Thank you for your advocacy. Again, the number, 503-221-4040. McNash Company. Susan's the front desk person. Give her a call. You've been listening to Joanne Hardesty on Voices from the Edge. See you next week, same time, same place, same station. Have a great day.
Stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
And good morning. Thank you for starting your day with the Boo, KBOO Portland. Coming up on your Thursday morning, we've got Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. That starts at 10. Then at 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. 45 minutes later at 11 on Between the Covers, join us for David Naiman talking to Dani Shapiro about her intensely emotional novel, Hourglass, Time, Memory, Marriage, about the joys and challenges of matrimonial life. And then at 11:30 on Words and Pictures, author and comics chronicler R.C. Harvey stops by to talk about the National Cartoon Society's Reuben Awards event coming to Portland. Plus, animation director David Silverman recounts his career as one of the original Simpsons animators. That's all coming up this morning on KBOO. Coming up, we've got Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell right after this.
KBOO at the Clinton in our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. We'll screen two films directed by Les Blank this month, Chulas Fronteras and Del Mero Corazon, on Thursday, June 8th at 7 p.m. Del Mero Corazon is a documentary on Chicano culture in America as it is expressed through music, focusing primarily on the Norteño sounds, featuring performances and interviews from Lil Joe and La Familia, Leo Garza, and more. Chulas Fronteras is a documentary about the music of the Mexican community on both sides of the Texas-Mexico border, particularly of migrant farmers. It includes materials about the roots of the music, but devotes principal attention to the music as a protest against oppression and racism. Again, these films will screen Thursday, June 8th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.